Good morning. It's good to see all of you here. It's a busy time of the year. Well, it's always busy, I think, at Carnes. There's a lot going on. I've had a tremendously busy summer, and tomorrow the school of preaching begins classes for the fall quarter. And so there's a lot of activity along that line. I believe there's actually a schedule in the bulletin as well. And those of you who are not working or have the availability, those classes are for you to benefit from as well. You don't have to take them for credit. But if you want to sit in and audit those classes, take a look at the schedule and see if there's a class there that you would want to attend, and you're welcome to attend those anytime you would desire. I'm pretty sure I was in second grade. I was walking home from school one day, and I had some friends with me, and the town I lived in was just one main road through the town. 2,500 people lived there, just a small town, and I wanted to see what it was like for a car to run over a brick. I don't know why, but I found a brick, and I waited for a car to come, and I threw that brick out in front of that car. I wasn't trying to hit the car. I wasn't trying to do damage or anything. I just really wanted to see a car run over a brick. And the car screeched to a stop. The woman driving put it in park and stood up out of her car, and I took off running. And I could hear her yelling my name, which was like, oh, no, she knows who I am. And I looked back, and it was the school secretary. And I ran. I didn't stop. I just kept right on running. I ran home. That was the most miserable night of my life, because I knew, see, I had a job in second grade at the school, the primary school that I was in. It was my job to go around to every classroom in the school building as class began, and I would pull this attendance chart off of the wall, and I would take it in and hand it to the secretary, which was the woman I threw the brick in front of. Oh, I lived in dread of that. That night, I was just sick with worry and fear. And that morning, I didn't want to do my job. And I brought it in there. And boy, she gave me a lashing. But I was glad it was over with. You know, the worrying of what was going to happen was far worse than my confronting my fears with her that morning. That's the way guilt works. And you might say, you know, well, what's that lead in have to do with Joseph? Because doesn't the slide say Joseph? And that is who we're going to study this morning. But this is the reason that I want us to talk about that, or that introduction is used. Sometimes people will say, don't you run out of things to talk about? What, you know, preaching, you're telling the same story over and over again. How can that be of interest to you or anybody else? I mean, it just seems like that'd get old after a while. Well, listen, there is such an inexhaustible supply of practical lessons from the stories that God has chosen to reveal to us in the Bible. And all you have to do is look at one of those, you remember we sing the song, Tell Me the Old, Old Story? All you have to do is take one of those old, old stories and look at it from somebody else's perspective. You see, when we tell the story of Joseph, what we typically do is we go through the story and we look over Joseph's shoulder and we look at the events that happened from his perspective. You know, he was mistreated. He was sold into slavery. He was put in prison. He was tempted by Potiphar's wife. He, you know, all of those things, first person, we look at it from Joseph's perspective. But, and when we do that, we see great lessons. Like if I were to ask you, and I asked the high school class this morning, I said, story of Joseph, what are the overarching themes from that story? And the answers they gave me were faithfulness to God. That's a good theme. And man, don't you know that took a lot of faithfulness on Joseph's part to be, you know, handed one misfortune after another, and yet he stayed faithful to God. It's a great theme, a great lesson. Another thing that somebody said was God working things out, his providence. When we talk about Joseph, we talk about providence. And that's what, you know, you can't miss it. Isn't it amazing? Here, the brothers seek to do him harm, and God says, I got you. I got this. And he's thrown into prison, and God says, I'll see to it that you excel there. While he was giving a servant to Potiphar, God helped him to rise to a level that gave him head over his house. And then even after he gets out of prison, God allows him to become second only to Pharaoh in Egypt. What's the likelihood that a shepherd boy from Israel would rise to the position of second in power in Egypt? Not hardly. Not without God's hand. That's one of those overarching themes. Other themes you can look at, and those things, you know, forgiveness. When the brothers finally are confronted with the sin that they committed, they no doubt are scared, and Joseph says, hey, don't give it a second thought. You know, God, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, and we're past it. You know, I forgive you. That's a great lesson. But one of the lessons that we never talk about from the book of Genesis, as we tell this story of Joseph, is guilt. And the reason we don't talk about it very often is because we don't tell it from a different perspective. We're just looking over Joseph's shoulder. What if I told this story of Joseph from the perspective of the brothers? That makes a difference. I don't know what's going on there. That makes a difference. Turn in your Bible, turn back to Genesis. I want you to see a couple passages. In Genesis chapter 44 and chapter 42, I want you to see two verses that we often, well, maybe overlook. Let's start in Genesis chapter 42, and let's look at verse 21. This is when the brothers come to Joseph. They don't know him. They don't recognize him. And they're asking for some food because there's a famine, and Joseph is kind of playing hardball with them for a little while and giving them grief and accused them of being spies and said, you stay here and go send for your younger brother, and then I'll let you go. And that's the way that you can prove you're not spies. And listen to the response by Reuben when this difficulty comes to their life. Then they said to one another, these are all the brothers, we are truly guilty. There's that word, guilt. We are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us that we would not, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. They're sitting around saying, can you believe this? Of all the we've come here for food, and now we're being accused of spies, we're being held. Our dad's not going to let Benjamin come to Egypt. We're in deep trouble here. I know why. It's because of our guilt. What had we done to Joseph? And Reuben saying, yeah, I know, and I told you guys not to do it, and you did it anyway. I knew that we were going to pay for this. In the back of their mind was that nagging. Here the first thing happens to them, kind of out of sorts, and the first thing comes to mind is, oh, we're getting what was coming to us. Look at Genesis chapter 44 and verse 16. When they found the cup in Benjamin's bag, you remember as the story unfolds, there's Judah who says in verse 16, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak, or how shall we clear ourselves? Listen, God has found us out in the iniquity of your servants. Okay, we've been caught. God is paying us back. Again, the first thought when they run into trouble is, this is all because of that event that happened. Let me just real quickly go through the story of Joseph and then make a few points about guilt. And I think that now that we can, as we look at the story and consider it from their perspective, it's not a story about providence. From their perspective, it's not a story about faithfulness and forgiveness. From their perspective, when you hear the story looking through their eyes, this is a story of guilt and how to deal with guilt. Joseph was one of two children of Jacob's favorite wife. And she died, and he paid special attention to both Benjamin and Joseph. And Joseph, he made a coat of many colors, and his brothers just, they hated him. They were sick of him. And then of all, he has the nerve to tell a dream that he had of where he said, hey guys, guess what? I had this dream, and I saw in this dream that you all were bowing down to me and paying me homage. That was all they could take. So one day when the father sent Joseph out to check on them, they saw him coming. They wanted to kill him. I mean, can you imagine being that angry with your brother? They said, let's kill him. And Reuben said, no, don't do that. And so they throw him in a pit to try to figure out what to do with him. And Reuben's reasoning is, well, after all, he is our brother. You know, just, I can almost hear him saying that. Well, he is our brother, but he's not against selling him into slavery. So they sell him into slavery, and he's taken to Egypt, and there as a slave. Think of how his life must have been turned upside down. Did you read what was said by Reuben when the brother said, or the brothers in verse 21 of chapter 42, we saw the anguish of his soul and we paid no attention to him. Man, he must have been, but please don't do this to me, please. And they could care less. And they sold him into slavery, and there God blessed him. He came into a position in a man's home and was taking care of all of his affairs. And then his master's wife made advances toward him. He resisted those advancements, and because of that was thrown in prison. She lied about him. She was bitter. She was scorned. And so she said, he tried to attack me. So Potiphar put him in prison. God was with him there. God raised him up to a place where he was in charge of the affairs that were going on in the prison, the other prisoners. And while in prison, he interpreted a man's dream, and he was restored to his place serving the king. And 2 years later, the guy forgot all about Joseph. He said, man, when I get out of here, I'll remember you. I'll tell Pharaoh you don't belong in here. 2 years later, the Pharaoh has a dream, and the butler goes, oh yeah, there was that guy. I was supposed to say something for him, and I didn't. And so he mentions him, and Joseph is led out to talk to Pharaoh, interprets his dream, tells him there's going to be 7 years of just great harvest, abundant harvest, and then 7 years of famine. Pharaoh said, wow, because of your wisdom, I'm going to put you in charge of all this. You're going to be second in command in Israel. I want you to harvest this abundance that we have so that we can store it for those lean years. And that's when the brothers come, because they're out of food. and they're sent to Egypt because they have food and word has spread. And they come to Joseph, and listen, at least 10 years have passed. They've had 7 years of bountiful, and they're in the second year of famine. That's 7 years right there. And how long was it? He was in prison for 2 years. That's 9 years. And how long was he working in Potiphar's house? And how long did it take them to get to Egypt? And what intervened in between? I don't know, but time has passed. A decade and more have passed. And the brothers have no idea that that is their brother. Why would they think? They didn't recognize him. He was a boy, and now he's a man. And so when he's finally revealed, I'm Joseph, that's when they were overcome. As that revelation took place, they felt guilt. When the first sign of trouble arose, they said, Joseph, it's what we did to him. I knew it. We shouldn't have done that. I knew it'd come back and bite us. And again, when found with the cup, God's getting even. It has not escaped the attention of God. Guilt. You know, as a kid, when I threw that brick, that night that I waited from the time I got home from school till the next morning when I had to face up to what I had done, I was miserable. And I can't imagine what these brothers must have been feeling. They have told a whopper of a lie to their dad. They have done a hideous thing to their brother. They have destroyed, for all they know, his life. It wasn't like a punch in the arm. This is life impacting. And that must have eaten at them. They never got buried. They never got past it. Because the first sign of trouble, it's the first thing that comes to their mind. And so I want us to look at three things that will happen because of guilt. And then how to deal with guilt. The three things that will happen is you're not going to have peace with God to begin with. Turn in your Bibles now to Psalm chapter 32. I want you to see something from the writings of David, as he himself felt tremendous guilt and how he dealt with it and what it did to his life. But I want you to notice how he begins that chapter. Psalm 32, verses 1 and 2. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. You want to be happy? Then be forgiven by God. Have a relationship with Him. Blessed is the man whose transgressions have been forgiven, because he's no longer at enmity with God. He's no longer at odds with God. There's peace with God. And if there's no peace with God, man, how do you pillow your head at night? I mean, how do you know? The next breath could be your last, and then eternity you have to pay. Blessed is the man who finds forgiveness. But the guy who's walking around guilty, who has unresolved sin in his life, as these brothers did, man, that had to have weighed heavy on them. You remember the Apostle Paul, he bore a heavy weight because of his former lifestyle. And he said, I'll tell you what I've done. I forget those things which are behind, and I press on, press forward to the high mark of the calling of Christ. You'll never have peace with God. Just as those brothers had done something wrong, sinful, and because of it, man, it was right there nagging them all the time. There could be people here, sitting here, who know you have sin in your life, and because of that, you know you don't have peace with God. You know you're living on precarious position. You know that you haven't taken care of what's wrong in your life. And if the Lord were to come back, if you were to die, how would you give account of that? That's hard to pillow your head. It's hard to have peace Because you can't have peace with God, and you know what the consequences of that will be. So that's what, first of all, happens when you have guilt, is you realize, man, I'm not right with God. And that's not a good place to be. You don't want to stay there for very long. And then the second thing is that you won't have any peace inwardly either. It'll nag at you. It'll wear at you. It'll cost you sleep. Look at what David says, beginning in verse 3, as we go on through this chapter. He said, when I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all the day long. For day and night, your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer. He said, I was miserable. I felt like an old man. I felt like there was a weight on me. The weight of your hand was pushing me down, crushing me, because I had not yet confessed. I think that's exactly what these men are going through. These brothers, they have told their dad, hey, Dad, bad news. See this jacket? It's the one you made Joseph. Look at it. They had killed an animal and put blood all over it and made the father think that he was killed by a wild beast. They didn't actually lie and say, look, Dad, Joseph was killed. We found his body and buried him in a desert somewhere. They just said, this is what we found. They lied to their dad about his son. What kind of bad is it if you would go to a mother or a father and lie to them and tell them that their child was killed? Now that's a separate kind of bad, isn't it? That's how much they hated Joseph. And they saw their dad grieve. They knew how badly that would hurt him, but they didn't care. And that weighed on them. David said, when I sinned and I refused to confess, it was like the hand of God was on top of me, just pushing me down, and I couldn't take it anymore. Edgar Allan Poe wrote some really dark poems and short stories and so forth. He was an American author from the 1800s. There's a short story that he wrote, and many of you have probably read it, called The Telltale Heart. And it's about a man who does away with another man that was living in the same apartment. And he had planned it. He'd schemed it. He had taken several nights figuring out how to do it. And finally he acts, and he does away with this man, but not before that man screams for his life. And a neighbor hears, calls the police, and the police arrive, and in the meantime, the man had hid this body under the floor. The police come in, and they can't find. He said, oh, that was just me. I had a bad dream, and I yelled out. No, the guy's out of the town. He's somewhere in the country, and I'll be back sometime. And he was so confident in what he had done, he pulled up chairs and set the chairs right over top of where he had disposed of that body. And he sat there and enjoyed a nice conversation with those police officers. And then he started hearing something. The thumps and noises of that body beneath the floorboards. And he was getting worried, and he was getting panicked, and there's this inner turmoil that's going on because of the guilt that he feels. And finally, you know, he's thinking, oh, they're messing with me. They've got to hear this too. They're just being polite, playing a game as if they don't hear it, and I know they hear it. And finally, he just confesses, okay, I did it. Quit playing this game. His body's right here. And he confesses and is taken to jail. They hadn't heard anything. There wasn't anything to hear. It was guilt. It drove the man mad. And there are people today who are living with guilt and they're miserable in their life. And they skew everything that happens is skewed through this perspective and this, you know, are they doing that because of this? And people don't even have a clue what you're doing. But you live with this fear and these walls that you yourself erect. It's a terrible place to be. You don't have peace with God. You don't have peace within yourself. And then here's what you do about it. Look what David said in Psalm 32, verse 5. I acknowledge my sin to you, and my iniquity I have not hidden. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. David said, I couldn't take it any longer, and so I just confessed. I said I had sinned, and God forgave me. And that's when those brothers found some relief as well, I'm sure. They're living with it. Do you know how hard it must have been for them to go back to their father and say, hey, Dad, sit down. You know, we've got to tell you what we've done to you. Boy, that was hard. But they've made progress as people because, you know, they didn't care what impact that was going to have on their dad when they sold him into slavery and convinced him that he had been killed. They didn't care what impact that had on their dad. But, you know, this time they do care because Reuben offers, hey, let me just stay here. Let my brothers go home and I'll just stay here and be your servant, or you can kill me or do whatever you want with me. Just let my brothers go home. I don't want my dad to suffer. They didn't care about him suffering earlier, but they've made progress, haven't they? They're concerned about the way their dad feels. You know, when you can bring yourself to the point where you finally say, I've done wrong, we've sinned, then you find resolution. And you get rid of the guilt, and you have peace of mind, and you have peace, more importantly, with God. And I think the message of guilt is really loud and clear in this story, but seldom talked about. And I think it's a message that we need to talk about today, because I think there are a lot of us in the same boat as Joseph's brothers. We've done things that are wrong. And because of fear or embarrassment, what others might think about me, we've not come clean, we've not repented, we've not confessed. And as a consequence, that's hurt our relationship with God. And not only that, but it's hurt our relationship internally. We filter everything through our misdeed. We think people are saying things for motives that they don't have anything in mind. And we get so paranoid and it's a weight on us. Get rid of the weight. Restore your relationship with God. Confess your faults and God will be faithful and just to forgive you. Just as he did David. And no doubt just as he did Joseph's brothers. If you're here this morning and you have guilt in your life, you know what my answer to that initially is? Good. You're supposed to. I fear the day when you no longer have guilt. And the longer you stay with it, the more calloused and more calloused you become. And there may be a day when you won't feel guilt anymore. I hope that day never comes, because that's the ruination of your soul. But if you have guilt this morning, I initially say, good, but don't stay there. Do something about it. Confess your faults and God will forgive you. If you're guilty today because you know I need to be baptized. I know that's what the Bible says and I haven't done it. And do it. Get rid of your guilt. Restore your relationship with God and have the peace of mind that comes from being forgiven. If you need to be baptized into Christ, we'll assist you with that. If you're a child of God already but unfaithful and there's something, maybe no one else knows, but you do, and it's been weighing on you, take it off. Enjoy the freedom of forgiveness. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord will not impute sin. If you need to come, we invite you to come as we stand together and sing.